Oh, no, it's just my fourth, I think.
You're sixth, Uncle. Indeed, indeed. Is Sir Louis growing worse, Uncle?
He is. He grows worse in health, he grows worse in everything. He is alcoholic, he is sickly. Well, he's not too sickly that he cannot bother and badger me. He is young and has the manner of a fool. And yet he knows his rights and is determined to have them.
Mr. Gresham, I think, borrowed a great deal of money from Sir Roger.
He did. Which Sir Louis is keen should be paid back swiftly. I fear that things are looking grim for Mr. Gresham. He has got himself a new lawyer, you know, recommended by the De Courcys. Things must be very grim.
Oh, no, Mr. Gazebee. I will not permit Sir Louis Scatcherd to come to this house.
Just for an evening, I mean.
No, Mr. Gazebee, I think not. His father, you know, was a very coarse, vulgar person. A drunkard, too.
Yes.
And the son, by all accounts, is not much better.
No better at all, Lady Arabella. It's a mere month since I began work on your husband's behalf, but in that short time I have already received four deeply unpleasant, not to say menacing, letters from Sir Louis. Lady Arabella, it is clear that Sir Louis has come from London to wrest all he can from the Greshamsbury estate, or to attempt to. But your ladyship has been blessed with great wisdom and good sense, and will therefore acknowledge that by offering Sir Louis hospitality, we might be able, how shall I say, to work upon him, tame him somewhat.
Well, yes, I suppose so.
I believe Sir Louis is staying with the executor of the Scatcherd estate, Dr. Thorne.
Yes.
Yes. Your ladyship might perhaps consider it wise to invite him, too.
Yes, Gazebee, I might. Indeed, I was already of half a mind to renew my acquaintance with the doctor.
The fellow's scampered off with £100 that he owed me.
I'm very well, thank you, Lady Arabella, but you, I understand, have not been entirely free from illness.
A recurrence, Doctor. A relapse.
Oh, dear.
But I think I'm a little better now.
I'm relieved to hear it.
You're looking beautiful this evening.
I didn't know that Frank would be here this evening.
Well, nor did we. He arrived just a few hours ago.
The year away has not, I think, done him any harm. He's very much a man of the world. As he should be, I suppose, having travelled much of the way round it.
Yes, yes, indeed. Dr. Thorne, my present health, as I say, is slightly improved. But as regards the future, it seems to me, on reflection, that it would be unwise, were I not to avail myself of your expertise and particular experience.
Well, you were doubtless right to try what other medical skill could do. But if you are happy to call upon my services again, I, in turn, will be happy to oblige.
Good. So, we are friends once more. And as such, Doctor, let us talk about Mary and this dreadful estrangement between my family and her. Cannot we do anything to put an end to it?
What can I say? That depends so wholly upon yourself.
If it depends on me, it shall be done at once. And then life can be as sweet and pleasant as it was before. But, Doctor, about her and Frank.
Frank?
Yes. Can you give your word that these people do not intend to do anything rash?
Ah, who is to answer for what acts of recklessness a young man will commit?
But, Doctor...
Lady Arabella!
Oh. Sir Louis.
I've been talking to your husband, Lady Arabella. It's good to be able to put a face to a name I'm always seeing in my accounts. Nice house, this.
Indeed it is.
I hardly know which I like better, this one or Boxall Hill.
Sir Louis, I wonder if
now, you've the advantage in trees here and such like, but Boxall Hill is very comfortable. Oh, you'd hardly recognise the place now, Lady Arabella, if you haven't been there since my father bought it.
I have not been there, Sir Louis, since your father bought it.
Yeah. How much do you suppose he spent on the house and grounds?
I have no idea.
Guess.
I never guess.
Well, I'll tell you then. £22,419, 4 shillings and 8 pence.
Really?
A tidy sum.
I think the architect might have shown some generosity, though, and dropped the 4 and 8 pence.
Eh?
Damned hot in London.
Oh, great heavens.
Well, I found it so, at least. I don't know what keeps fellas there when it's so bad. Well, except
fellas... Oh, there you are, Doctor. I thought you must have fled the house.
I had a mind to, Frank. I truly did.
Yes. Your friend is getting pickled.
I fear so. I've asked for the carriage to come for him a little early.
A sound idea. How is Mary?
She is well.
I wish she could have been here this evening. Then again, she's probably better off at home. I'd be very grateful, Doctor, if you would send her my love.
Yes. Yes, I'll do that.
You won't forget, will you?
No, Frank. I won't forget.
Oh, there's nothing like land. Oh. I'll have a bottle, Gatsby, if you've done with it.
Yes, Sir Louis.
Nothing like dirty acres, is there, Squire?
Land is a very good investment, certainly.
What do you think, Mr. Gatsby?
Well, I'm...
Or do you only give an opinion when you're being paid for it?
What?
But listen, Gresham. Now, the figures are all totted up.
Sir Louis, please.
And you're down in my books for pretty near £100,000.
No.
Hold your tongue, sir.
What?
Hold your tongue. We'll not talk about business now.
Oh, very well. Well, let's go and join the ladies. I'm always ready to join the ladies.
Forgive me, Sir Louis, but it cannot be permitted.
What do you mean? Why not?
And you'll have no more wine either.
Come now, Doctor.
Mr. Gresham... Mr. Gatsby, my apologies.
Mm-hmm,
if you would both care to leave Sir Louis with me,
huh?
He and I will stay here till our carriage arrives.
Mary, my sweetest. Did your uncle pass on my message?
Yes, he did.
Well, now I'm come to give you the words in person. Mary, I love you. And loving you as I do, I wish to ask you again if you can return my love and we can be man and wife.
Oh, Frank.
There may be difficulties for us, but if you love me, we can get over them.
Oh, but is it not wrong? Is it not imprudent?
Oh, I'm sick of having to be prudent. If it is imprudent, let it be so, but it is certainly not wrong. Not if we love each other. You do love me, Mary, don't you?
Yes, Frank. I do love you.
Oh, Mary.
And if that were all, you would have no cause for fear.
My dearest, I have no cause for fear, none whatsoever.
But your mother, your father too.
Mary, we must be true to each other. We must be firm. Nothing that any of them can say shall drive me from my purpose. Will you, for your part, promise as much?
Yes, Frank. Yes, I will be firm. Nothing they say shall shake me.
I'll tell you something, Doctor. I won't be made a prisoner of.
A prisoner, Sir Louis? Surely not. You are free to go as you please.
I am not free to go. I'm not strong enough to move from this bed. But I should not for that reason be denied my requests. I asked for a liqueur with my coffee. It was not brought. I asked for my bottle of cherry brandy.
It was not brought.
I won't endure it, Doctor. I'll not be treated like this.
Well, then you must leave us. When you think you are recovered, that is.
You'd like me dead, wouldn't you, Doctor?
Oh.
I do believe you would.
Sir Louis, I am doing all I can to save your life. And while you remain in my house, I shall continue to keep from you the means of destroying yourself. If you are wise, you will stay here another week or two and benefit from the regimen I have tried to set. But I have no power over you. As I said, you are free to go.
Well, I will go, as soon as possible. I've done pretty well all that I can here. Had that damn lawyer Gatsby over to see me this morning.
Oh, yes.
Made things pretty plain. Gresham must pay up fast, Doctor, or else we'll have recourse to the law.
Sir Louis.
No, I want that money. I want to invest it in land.
But it is...
My mind is made up, Doctor. You'll not dissuade me. Doctor.
Yes, Sir Louis.
You don't actually think I'm going to die, do you?
I don't think it. I know you will. If you continue to...
Yes, but if I go along as you advise me...
We're all of us in God's hands, Sir Louis, but at least you'll be giving yourself the best chance.
It's very hard. I have nobody to say a kind word to me. Nobody.
Oh, dear.
All those friends up in London, not one of them cares a straw for me, really.
You may be right there, Sir Louis.
But you're a good fellow, Doctor. An honest fellow. And I do believe you'd like me to be well.
I would, I assure you.
I could do it. I could, I'm sure, but not on my own. I need a wife to help me, Doctor. I want to marry your niece.
No.
Please.
I advised you before. And indeed, I understand that she has told you herself.
Oh, but I love her.
Sir Louis, it is quite impossible.
I love her. I do. You've been promised that young Gresham fellow, I suppose. Oh, God, I love her. I love her!
I have done all that I promised Louis's father, I have done all that I promised myself, but my efforts will be in vain. Sir Louis will drink himself to death. We'll manage it long before he reaches the age of 25, and Mary then will be heir to the scattered estate. She will become a rich woman. The likelihood of this is very strong. So strong that I wonder whether I ought not to be candid. Ought not to tell Squire Gresham what Mary's prospects really are. Surely by doing so I might prevent much anguish, much heartache. It won't do. I shall not be candid. I shall not speak about the will, not while Sir Louis lives. Let Frank marry Mary for one reason only, because he loves her.
You received a note from Beatrice, I hope.
Yes, Lady Arabella.
I thought it best to advise you that I was coming. I didn't want to fluster you by arriving here without notice. Miss Thorne, Mary. As you know, Beatrice is soon to be married.
Yes, Lady Arabella.
And the poor girl is extremely anxious that you should be at the wedding. She is very fond of you, as indeed are all of us. And we all would be delighted to receive you at Greshamsbury House once again and make you welcome. Provided there was no objection to your being there.
Is there an objection?
Well, Mary, I think you best can answer that. A rumour has been persisting, Mary, that you are engaged to be married to Frank. You no doubt are aware of this rumour.
Oh, yes, I am aware of it.
And?
The rumour is true.
You are engaged?
Yes.
You are engaged to my son, Miss Thorne. And you dare to tell me so to my face.
Lady Arabella, I could not answer your question with a falsehood. I am engaged.
Then I fear it is indeed impossible for you to be received at Greshamsbury House.
At present, quite so, but...
Oh, believe me, Miss Thorne, it is altogether out of the question. Now, forever. Miss Thorne, Mary, this is a very unfortunate and a very distressing affair. Mary, you must release Frank from his promise.
Release him? No, it is for him to release me, if he wishes it.
Oh, but you know, Mary, how high-minded he is and honourable. He will not break his word to you. You know that. Is it right, therefore, is it noble of you? You have nothing to give him in return.
I have no money, it is true, but...
Is it right to bind him to his foolish promise?
Lady Arabella...
Release him, Miss Thorne. You know that he cannot marry without money. Think of Frank's position at Greshamsbury. Think of the house, the family, the name, and the pride that we take in it. Think of the pain you will cause us. Miss Thorne, if you really love my son, you cannot wish to bring on him, to bring on his family, such appalling misery and devastation.
She is hateful to me.
hateful. But when she pleaded with me, pressed her arguments as to why I should not marry Frank, well, I could not fail to recognize some truth in them. And in truth, I do not believe that I ever gave much consideration, as I should have done, to the likely effect of my marriage on the Gresham family and on Frank's standing in the world. Perhaps it is true also that he did not make his proposal with sufficient forethought, and that now he has made it, he cannot be the first to draw back, so that this duty, and duty I think it is, must be mine. Mine. Oh, Lady Arabella is a hateful woman, and I will always find her so. But I fear that what she said was right.
Doctor, they cannot marry. You must know that.
Well, I don't know that exactly.
But they ought not, at least.
Ought not? Oh, I'm not sure about that either. Mr. Gresham, I have never interfered in this matter one way or the other, and I have no wish to do so now.
Perhaps you should have interfered.
I confess I don't see why. What is your objection to them marrying?
Need you ask? They will have nothing to live on, Doctor.
And is that the only obstacle?
It's enough, is it not?
There is no other difficulty. You would not, for instance, refuse your consent because of Mary's birth.
Dr. Thorne, I...
There was some talk a while ago connecting Frank with a certain Miss Dunstable.
Yes.
Would you have objected if Frank had married her?
Miss Dunstable is not illegitimate. At least I assume she is.
No, Mr. Gresham. So Miss Dunstable would have satisfied your ideas of high birth?
No. No, I don't think she would. But I will admit that the advantages of wealth do atone somewhat for a marriage beneath one's station. In the eyes of the world, that is.
And do they do so in your eyes?
Well, yes. But this makes no difference, Doctor, no difference at all. It's Miss Thorne that Frank wants to marry, not Miss Dunstable.
You've come to town on business?
Yes, Miss Dunstable, I fear so.
Business, business. You know, I have been trying to sell the ointment of Lebanon for 2 years now. Oh, the whole enterprise, I mean, not just the odd job. But my lawyer never lets me.
Also, Miss Dunstable, I am to do some thinking over while I'm in town. I promised Mother I would.
And is it Miss Thorne, by any chance, who is to be thought over?
Yes, it is. Mother says that she has had a talk with Mary. She says that Mary now feels in her heart that it would be wrong to continue the engagement, but at the same time she cannot draw back because of the promise she has made. So it is for me, says Mother, to set Mary free from that promise.
I see.
Oh, Miss Dunstable, it is much, much harder than I anticipated being a brave, true knight-errant.
I'm certain it is. But you have travelled far, have you not? It will be a great misfortune if you turn back now.
Dr. Thorne? Dr. Thorne?
Oh, Frank. Oh, upon my word, I do beg your pardon. I fear that the journey and everything has rather tired me out. Are you happy to talk here?
Of course.
There are pleasanter coffee houses in London, I should imagine. But anyway, I'm glad you could see me.
I'd have come sooner, but I had yet another appointment with the lawyers, and I didn't get your note till midday. But what is this news of some importance? And why are you in London?
Well, I am in London on account of the news. Like you, I have been seeing lawyers. And I shall have to see them many times yet. The news is, Frank, Sir Louis Scatcherd is dead.
Oh, the poor fellow. Was it very sudden?
It was. Though not, of course, unexpected.
Were you with him?
No, Dr. Filgrave was. But there was nothing I fear that could be done to save him. Oh, what folly. First the father and now the son. Utter folly.
Yes. Nevertheless, his death will come as a great relief to you.
And what? On account of my duties as executor? Oh, yes, yes, indeed. It will be a relief to your father, too. All this wretched business about the loan can be finished with.
Finished with? I think not. Postponed, rather.
Postponed. Yes, as you say.
Doctor, I have received a letter from Mary, which I would like you to read.
Well,
she asks me to release her from our engagement. Pleads so very eloquently.
Yes.
And yet she does still love me, I'm certain.
Yes, Frank. I believe she does.
Do you wish me to give her up?
Dear boy, how could I? She'll find no better match in the whole world. Now, Frank, listen. This is my advice. Don't see Mary. Do nothing.
But
wait a while. Wait a fortnight. That will give me time enough, I would imagine. And after that, I will ask you to see me. I will ask your father, too.
A fortnight is a long time, Doctor, and Mary has suffered terribly.
She has. But wait a fortnight, if you will. And then something, I think, can be settled at last.
Before we begin on any other matters, Doctor.
Yes, Mr. Gresham?
Frank has been talking to me about Miss Thorne.
About Mary, Father?
Mary, yes. And I can tell you now that I have agreed to the match.
Oh, I'm very pleased to hear it.
She's a fine girl.
She is.
And as Frank has set his heart on marrying her, I suppose he must do so. It will not be at all easy for them.
Well,
they won't be rich, but Frank intends to take charge of some land and to farm it, and...
Just 1 minute, Squire, please. The death of Sir Louis makes something of a difference to all this, you know.
Perhaps, but not permanently.
Mr. Gresham, Frank, you know, it has grieved me very much to see the Gresham estate melting away, to witness the loss of family acres that have for so long been the heritage of the Greshams.
Need we talk about this now, Dr. Thorne?
Forgive me, but I particularly wanted to make myself understood on this point. You see, Frank, I would never have permitted Mary to think of being married to you if I had not considered that it would be for the best.
Well, it will be for the best.
I hope so. Indeed, I am sure of it. So then, to the reason for my wishing to talk to you. And I am sorry that I could not have talked 2 weeks ago, but there were preliminary steps I had to take. Frank. Dear Frank.
Yes, Doctor.
Frank, your wife will not, as you suppose, come to you empty-handed. I wish for your sake and for hers that her birth were equal to her fortune. Her moral worth, at any rate, is superior to both. But money she has, or will have.
Indeed?
Oh, yes, Mr. Gresham. Your son's marriage will put an end to your pecuniary embarrassments, unless, of course, young Frank should prove to be a hard creditor.
I don't understand.
Then let me be plain. My niece, Mary Thorne, is Sir Roger Scatcherd's heir.
She is what?
The heir?
Yes. Well, then, I ought to explain as well as I can of what her fortune consists.
But
a good while, you know, getting all the paperwork in order for you.
Dr. Thorne, what is it you mean?
I told you, Mary is Sir Roger's heir.
Are you certain of this?
Oh, yes. I wasn't 2 weeks ago, but since then I've been to the best lawyers in the land, Sir Abraham Haphazard among them, and I'm assured that there is not the slightest doubt. Now,
Mary's fortune. I have all the figures here somewhere.
Sir Roger's heir.
Including, Mr. Gresham, the exact amount that you owed the Scatcherd estate and now owe her. So when do you mean to pay my niece? She'll be in a great hurry, I'm sure. Oh, what's this? Item for the treating of Farmer Oaklerath's gout. Oh, dear. There's such a bother, all these pieces of paper.
Dr. Thorne.
Look, let's make it simple. These are the Boxall Hill deeds. These are the Greshamsbury deeds, which lately had been transferred to the Scatcherd estate, and which will now be going back to Greshamsbury. Though in truth, all these deeds should sit in the same pile, since Boxall Hill and Greshamsbury are one again. There. All together. That's the way.
Does Mary know about this?
Not one word. I thought you might tell her. She's in the drawing room.
But you see, it's possible, is it not? Since the circumstances have now altered so much. Dr. Thorne, I shan't hold her to our engagement.
What on earth do you mean?
Now that things are so changed, she must have time, at any rate, for consideration.
Oh, yes, yes, by all means. How long shall we give her, Mr. Gresham? 3 minutes? Go and see her, Frank. You've been ready enough with your visits when you knew you should stay away.
I don't think I can comprehend it all yet. I'm too bewildered.
You go to her, Doctor. It's you that should do it.
And so I went to Mary. And not without many tears, from her and me, I explained everything to her as well as I could, including the circumstances of her birth. And later that day, Mr. Gresham told the Lady Arabella the news, told her that Frank, after all, was to marry money, upon which I gather she fainted, and her first words, when she revived, were,
"Dear Mary, dear Mary."
It seems so very strange, Beatrice, being back with you at Greshamsbury House.
Oh, Mary, you are one of the family once more. I am so happy. Tell me, is it yet decided when you are to be married?
Well, it will not be before you are, Beatrice, dear. You may be certain of that. Early in April, perhaps. Though not as early as the first of that month. But Frank and I want to be taken seriously, you know.
Now, here is Mama.
Mary.
How do you do, Lady Arabella?
Mary. Oh, Mary. My child, my daughter, my dear Frank's own bride. Oh, Mary, can you forgive me? Can you forgive me?
Lady Arabella.
If I have ever seemed unfriendly to you or unkind, it has been because of the love I feel for my dear, dear son.
Oh.
You know that. Do you not?
Lady Arabella, all these things are over now. You have asked me here to be received as Frank's future wife. And so, you see, I am come.
And this was the very place, I'm sure, where I told you I loved you.
Oh, I think there are many places where you've told me that.
It was my 21st birthday. And you were very formal with me. Called me Mr. Gresham, which you had never done before.
Yes, Mr. Gresham. Dearest Mr. Gresham. But much has happened since then.
We are to be married.
Yes. We are to be wealthy too. And Frank, when we are wealthy, I am to buy a bonnet.
Just one?
A French bonnet. I promised Uncle I would.
It seemed to me that the greater part of Barsetshire was at the wedding. Numerous de Courcys, the Duke of Omnium, who never usually goes anywhere, I'm told, and whose presence rendered Lady Arabella quite ecstatic with pride and pleasure. Dear Lady Scatcherd was present, of course, and one of the bridesmaids was Miss Dunstable, whom I found to be a very interesting lady. She wondered if I might like to buy up her business. Ointment of Lebanon, you know. Archdeacon Grantly and Mr. Oriel together performed the ceremony. and the day passed pleasantly enough. Frank's speech at the dinner informed us, among other things, that he was still every inch aggression. And I remember that Miss Dunstable caught Mary's bouquet and was much amused at doing so. And now Frank and Mary have established themselves at Boxall Hill. Lady Scatcherd does not live there, though Mary pleaded with her to stay. She has a cottage in Greshamsbury, but she goes to see them from time to time. As do I, when this house has grown just a little too quiet. I know the way to Boxall Hill just as well as I did, and the tea that Mary offers there is as good as ever it was when she was at Greshamsbury. Sweet, dear girl. Her husband, I think, is a fortunate man. And she, in turn, is fortunate in him. I wish joy to them both. From the bottom of my heart.
Would I have joined the clergy if it were not for Lady Lufton? I cannot say. The church was never, as I recall, the profession to which I thought I was best suited. What I can say, of course, is that if it were not for Lady Lufton, I would not have become the vicar of Framley. The living of Framley, which is worth £900 a year, was in Lady Lufton's gift, and she thought it right to offer it to me, though I was very young. And I, young as I was, thought it right to accept this offer. I have much reason to be grateful to this patroness of mine. And yet I must confess, I do not altogether enjoy being Lady Lufton's protégé, would rather not be so much in her debt. After a while, one begins to wonder if life outside her ladyship's influence might not have much to recommend it.
Framley Parsonage by Anthony Trollope. Dramatised by Martin Wade.
Mark, the Merediths are to be at Framley on Saturday.
Yes, my dear.
So I promised Lady Lufton that we would go to Framley Court and see them. Stay over for a few days.
Well, Fanny, you can go, and of course you will. But as for me, it's impossible, I'm afraid.
But why?
I'm intending to spend a week at Chaldicotes.
Chaldicotes? For a week?
You mustn't be censorious.
Oh, I hope I'm not that, but Lady Lufton...
She will be censorious.
You know how she doesn't like those Chaldicotes people. She was very annoyed with you the last time you went.
She was, but that, I think, was because I took Lord Lufton with me and she feared for her son's morals. Fanny, I must go. I promised I would. And also, Harold Smith will be there.
Harold Smith?
He's a rising star in the House, will be in government some day. I cannot afford to neglect his acquaintance.
Can you not?
No, indeed. Also, Dr. Proudie will be present, and Mrs. Proudie.
Oh, well, if the pleasure of meeting Mrs. Proudie is taking you to Chaldicotes, I've nothing more to say.
Fanny, a parish clergyman does well to see his bishop now and then, and the bishop's wife.
I will miss you, Mark. And so will the children. You'll have a word with Lady Lufton, will you, before you go?
Well, I might drop her a note. Or you might speak to her, my dear.
And if I do, what must I tell her?
Why, that I'm going, of course.
Yes, but...
Oh, I have been invited to preach a charity sermon while I'm there, so you could mention that.
She'll be very annoyed, whatever I tell her.
Yes, I suppose she will. But you know, she can't always have her own way.
A charity sermon? At Chaldicotes?
You amaze me, my dear.
He is so very sorry about it, Lady Lufton, but it seems he accepted the invitation some while ago.
Well, well. I know the Chaldecotts has many great attractions. Far more than Framley Court can offer.
Oh, it wasn't that. It wasn't that at all.
Was it not, my dear? Was it not indeed? Oh, I'm being small-minded, perhaps. But I confess that I do like to see your husband in his own parish for most of each week, and in his own church on Sundays. And I also happen to think, Fanny, that he would be far better off with us than with the Chaldecott set. I really do.
He would undoubtedly be better off here, Lady Lufton. But then, one can't always find oneself in places where one's better off. It just isn't possible.
Not for your husband, at least. It seems that the charms of Mr. Sowerby and the Harold Smiths and the Proudies are proving quite irresistible.
Oh, Lady Lufton, please don't be angry.
I'm not angry. Disappointed, perhaps. But not with you, Fanny. I do not believe your husband has acted properly. But I don't believe that you do either. We've said enough on this matter, I feel. Your husband is not taking you with him to Chaldecott's. And for that reason, if for no other, we shall forgive him. Shall we not, my dear?
The Chaldecotts set, as Lady Lufton calls them, are not quite what a set ought to be according to Lady Lufton's principles. Her ladyship likes people who love their church, their high church, that is, so she has no time for the Proudies. She likes people who love their country and their queen and who are not too anxious to make a noise in the world. And because Lady Lufton is of this cast of mind, she does not care too much for the Chaldecott set. Will no longer care much for me, perhaps, if she thinks I am inclined to join them. But I am inclined to join them. I'm very much inclined. For life, I think, should offer me a little more than what Framley and Lady Lufton can provide.
My dear Robarts.
Now, this is Mr. Nathaniel Sowerby, the owner of Chaldecott's and Member of Parliament for West Barsetshire.
Welcome again to Chaldecott's. Delighted to see you.
Sowerby, the pleasure is all mine, believe me. Mr. Sowerby and I know each other tolerably well. Better, I admit, than I have given either Lady Lufton or my dear wife to understand.
You're the last to arrive, you know. But now the fun can begin, eh? Oh, by the way, we have an addition to our number.
Indeed.
Miss Dunstable, her name is.
Miss Dunstable.
A rich woman. She's worth 200,000 or thereabouts. Made it all, or rather her father did, from some quack's remedy called Ointment of Lebanon.
Ah, yes.
It was my sister's idea to invite her. Sadly, Miss Dunstable lacks the looks to go with all those thousands. But, well, beggars can't be choosers.
Oh, I see. You're thinking of...
An alliance, yes. Ah, me... You know, there is no man more unfortunate than one who has a large estate but no money. Now, Robarts, there is just time, I think, for you to dress for dinner.
In the wrong place, Mr. Sowerby?
Yes, Miss Dunstable. You should be over here, next to me. And my sister should be next to Mr. Robarts.
Oh, well, I am thoroughly settled now, if Mrs. Smith doesn't mind.
No, not too much. Nathaniel's table manners are tolerable, I think.
So, Mr. Robarts, you are not born and bred in Barsetshire?
No, indeed. I was brought up in Exeter. My father and one of my sisters still live there. But I visited Framley. I am vicar there, you know. I visited Framley quite often in my younger days because I was a friend of Lord Lufton, Lady Lufton's son.
And a friend of his you have remained through thick and thin.
Yes, I like to think so.
Tell me, Mr. Robarts, do you have very much work to do in the parish of Framley?
Much work? Oh, there's plenty of work in every parish if the clergymen choose to do it.
Oh, yes. I suppose that is very much the point, isn't it? If they choose to do it.
Let me tell you, Miss Dunstable.
Yes, Mrs. Proudie.
If a man of the cloth neglects those duties for which he has been called, then he must answer for it. Uh-huh. Is that not so, Bishop?
Yes, most certainly. Yes.
Answer for it before his bishop and before God.
Before God, yes.
I
I think a vicar's life must be the happiest that a man can lead.
Do you?
I particularly envy him his weekly climb into the pulpit. I should love to preach a sermon more than anything in the world.
Well, Miss Dunstable, we cannot indulge you this Sunday, I'm afraid. Not at Chaldicotts, at least.
Oh, yes, Mr. Robarts is preaching a charity sermon, I believe, in aid of the Congolese pygmies.
No, Dr. Proudie. Mr. Robarts' sermon and the lecture that I am giving in the Mechanics Institute at Barchester...
Oh, heavens.
...are both in support of the natives of Borneo, Papua and the Philippines, the Moluccas, Sarawak, the Solomon Islands...
Yes, Harold, and several other islands newly discovered in the vicinity and as yet unnamed. But let us be spared all that for now. Please.
I'm sorry you didn't bring Lord Lufton to Chaldicotts. Where is he all this time?
He was in Scotland when I last heard from him.
I wonder, has he told you at all about some land of his in Oxfordshire?
Yes, Sowerby, he has. Intending to sell it, I believe. Raise enough to pay what he owes you.
Yeah, that's right. And he's been very dilatory about it, too. But of course he's so very afraid of his ancient mother. Terrified of what she'll say when she learns why he needs such a large sum of money. Perhaps you might do me a great favour, Robarts, and write to Lufton.
Well?
Tell him that I'm finding the delay in this business very inconvenient. He'll do anything for you, I know. And since in all probability he'll neither be here nor at Gatherum Castle, I won't get a chance to talk to him for a good few weeks. Oh, by the way, I hear that you've been invited to go on to Gatherum.
Yes, I was informed this evening.
You've accepted, I take it?
Well, no, I haven't.
What?
I very much doubt, Sowerby, if I can afford the time.
Of course you can.
I am not a man of pleasure, as you are. I have parish duties to get back to.
Nonsense, Robarts.
Oh, but I do, I assure you.
Well, naturally, there are bound to be duties. Just a few, but you employ a curate, do you not? Let him perform them. I know full well, though, that it's not your parish duties that cause you concern at all.
Is it not?
No, you dread the wrath of the Framley Dowager. You're in as bad a way as her son, Robarts. She has you tied hand and foot.
Not true. If it were, I wouldn't be here now, would I?
My dear friend, listen. I have much regard for you, and would not like to see you throw away a good chance when it has come your way. It's possible, I suppose, that you're quite content to live at Framley for the rest of your life and to warm yourself in Lady Lufton's sunshine. But if you have higher aspirations, as I think you do, then it would be unwise of you to refuse the Duke of Omnium's invitation.
I would very much like to go, I assure you.
Then go you must. You said you have duties to attend to. But you also, Robarts, have a duty to yourself.
Lady Lufton regards the Duke of Omnium with revulsion and horror, for whereas she is a true blue Tory, he is a Whig, and a patron of Whigs, of men such as Sowerby. And she fears that with Sowerby's assistance, the Duke is in process of extending his baleful influence upon her own son, Lord Lufton. It is the Duke, she believes, who has persuaded Lufton to feel contempt for old-fashioned country ways, to show little interest in marriage, and every interest in what she regards as his own selfish gratification. This Omnium, this ducal incarnation of Beelzebub, has invited me to Gatherum Castle, has proposed that I should be numbered among his friends. Well, I must have risen in the world to have received an honour such as this. And by friendship with the Duke, I could rise much higher still.
Ladies and gentlemen, the carriages are here.
Yes, but I'm afraid Dr. and Mrs. Proudie are not.
This is too bad. It really is. My lecture is to commence at 7.
Sorry, Harold, but we can't leave without the Proudies.
Dear brother, please. You're not to call my husband Harold anymore.
Oh, am I not?
No, indeed. He has lectured me so much already, lectured all of us concerning his new pet topic, that he is to be addressed as Baron Borneo now.
Thank you, Harriet.
Then you, Mrs. Smith, ought to be Lady Papua.
Oh, yes, yes, I insist upon the title.
And you, Mr. Robarts, are henceforth Bishop of the Moluccas.
I'm much obliged, Miss Dunstable. I'll have a tolerable income, I hope.
Well, you'll never be short of spices. You know, these South Sea Islanders sound so marvellous. I think I shall have to marry one of them. Oh, now look, here's the rest of the party.
At last.
Good afternoon.
Dr. Proudie.
Yes?
I thought that in your carriage, you and Mrs. Proudie might be accompanied by my sister.
Lady Papua?
And by Mr. Robarts.
The Bishop of Malaccas.
What? Who?
While Miss Dunstable...
Oh, no, 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 no. I must travel with Mrs. Proudie.
Must you?
Yes.
Why must you?
She promised she would finish telling me about her wicked, wanton former chaplain.
The bishop's former chaplain, I think.
Yes, you mean...
Mr. Slope!
Yes, fie, fie, Mr. Slope.
We're rather late, I think.
Ooh, only by an hour or so.
Everyone is being patient, I must say.
Oh, English folk invariably are, if they think they'll be getting something free of charge.
Bishop.
What? There he is.
Mr. Harding is here.
What? Who?
Mr. Harding. The former warden of Hiram's Hospital.
Oh, Mr. Harding, yes, certainly. Where should he be, my dear?
Ladies and gentlemen.
You know... I should like to give a lecture someday. I should like it almost as much as preaching a sermon.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, well, he's made an encouraging start, Lady Papua. Oh, yes, he has them in the palm of his hand.
My friend.
This bench will seem very hard in the second hour.
Brother dearest, this bench feels very hard already.
My friend, far, far away along the track which the equator makes for itself through distant oceans lies a group of grand, magnificent islands rich in exotic spices and glorious fruits. Civilization! Oh, civilization!
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, indeed. We are done for now.
Oh, civilization that ennoblest man and maketh him divine.
The lecture is having a profound influence upon your bishop, Mr. Robarts.
What? Oh, yes.
It's affecting Mrs. Proudie, too. She looks quite upset.
But surely...
My friend! My dear friends, if we are to offer help to these South Sea Aborigines, it is to the power of civilization that we must look. Therefore...
And to Christianity, surely, Mr. Smith, and to Christianity!
Oh, well.
We must look to Christianity, must we not?
Christianity, of course.
And Sabbath day observance in particular. The islanders will never prosper, Mr. Smith, unless they keep the Sabbath holy. You should remember that.
I can't say I much care for Mrs. Proudie as a rule, but on this occasion I think she spoke to very good effect. Mr. Harold Smith never recovered from the lady's interruption. Civilization had lost, and Mrs. Proudie had won. I have spent the night at the bishop's palace, wasn't at all keen on going there, but I thought it politic to accept the Proudie's kind invitation.
Tea, Mr. Robarts.
Thank you. Yes, the plan is for me to join the rest of the party at the Dragon of Wantley, and then for all of us to go back to Chaldecott's in time for the morning service.
Ah, indeed. Your charity sermon. Christianity, at least, will get a mention there.
Yes.
Tell me, Mr. Robarts, it is your custom to hold 3 Sunday services at Framley, is it not?
No, Mrs. Proudie.
Oh? It ought to be. The church, Mr. Robarts, the church. There is no better place, surely, for your parishioners to spend the Sabbath. The bishop, I should advise you, intends to express a very strong opinion on this subject later this month. You will, I'm certain, attend to his wishes. Mr. Robarts, you have a very fine living at Framley.
Yes, it's comfortable enough.
£900 per annum, I believe.
Yes.
And you, such a young man still. Lady Lufton must think very highly of you. And it was she, was it not, who introduced you to your wife, who had some money herself? You have fallen on your feet, Mr. Robarts. Indeed, you have. I trust you will not take your good fortune for granted.
Having assured Mrs. Proudie that I would do no such thing, I went from the palace to the Dragon of Wantley, where the rest of the party had spent the night. And there, to my distress, I found that though it was already 8:30, not one of them had yet gone down for breakfast.
Your robots! You've got to help me shave.
Sir, we should be heading back to Chaldecott's by now.
Nonsense. Plenty of time.
I think not. And it wouldn't do for me to be late for the service.
It wouldn't do for any of us to be late. Oh, pass me a towel, will you? Yeah, much obliged.
I'll go on ahead, Sabi. If you don't mind, I'll hire a gig.
Don't be absurd. No need for that. I'll tell you what you can do, though. You can see that the tea is made, and you can ask for the bill. You can pay it through if you like.
I did my best to hasten proceedings short of paying the bill, but it was gone 9:00 before breakfast began, and a leisurely enough affair it was too. You see, the Chaldecotts said, by and large, have no concept of punctuality, nor are they much inclined to be hurried.
I should rather like another 1/2 cup if it's in the pot.
Certainly, Harriet.
Mr. Sowerby, please. Mrs. Smith.
Yes, Mr. Robarts.
I shall hire that gig after all.
A gig? Oh, how exciting. Perhaps I should come with you, Mr. Robarts, and have a go at driving it.
No, Miss Dunstable. You'll be much happier in the carriage with me.
Well, dearest Fanny, in due course we all set off on a 12-mile gallop and reached the church late, of course, and my charity sermon, parts of which I had hastily revised lest it provoke ridicule among the Chaldecotts set, went off without special notice, which was as much as I could have wished for it in the circumstances. But now, my love, I have something to tell you which is even more astounding than the various dissipations already described.
Next week there is to be a party of folk at Gatherham Castle, and I have been persuaded to join them. Gatherham Castle? Oh, my dearest, no. The Duke of Omnium expressly sent me an invitation, and everyone here, the bishop included, said that my refusing it would seem very strange, nay, offensive, if I could not offer a real reason for doing so. Oh, but Mark, is not the Duke of Omnium reason enough himself? Is not the Duke thoroughly obnoxious and damnable? Is he not immoral in every way? My own darling will not be pleased when she reads this. But she will understand why I am going. Yes, Mark, yes, I fear I do. Of course, Lady Lufton will have to be informed of my whereabouts. She will. Oh, dear. But I know, my love, that you will make all as smooth for me as you possibly can.
Gatherham Castle?
Yes, Lady Lufton.
Your husband is going from Chaldecott's house to stay at Gatherham Castle?
That is his intention.
Then I must tell you fairly, I have done with him.
Oh, Lady Lufton, don't say so.
But what else can I say? You would not wish me to speak falsehoods, would you? Your husband has every right to make his own choice, but he cannot live with two sets of people. Not if I belong to one and the Duke of Omnium to the other.
But he assured me it was impossible for him to refuse the invitation, not without giving offence.
That's nonsense. It's more than nonsense. It's hypocrisy.
No.
Oh, indeed.
Lady Lufton, my husband may have been ill-judged, but he is no hypocrite.
Very well, my dear. I dare say you know him better than I. But he has certainly betrayed me.
Betrayed you? No.
I gave your husband a position in the world. Gave him an income that is sufficient, I would have thought, for a gentleman's wants.
Lady Lufton.
I gave him my trust. My confidence. But he has broken that trust, betrayed that confidence. He has betrayed me, and he has deceived me.
Lady Lufton, you are very hard upon him. I did not expect this from a friend.
My dear, I speak my mind whether I am with friends or not.
He has done nothing to deceive you. He asked that I tell you of his plans.
Well, yes. He could not very easily have kept me in the dark. He could not have expected to neglect his work and to go and live with gamblers and adulterers without my getting to know of it sooner or later.
You forget yourself. You are not justified in saying those things. Whether he is right or wrong in staying at Gatherham Castle is not for you or me to decide. He is the judge of his own actions.
Oh, and when he leaves you with the butcher's bill unpaid and no money to buy food for the children, Who will be the judge then?
Not you, Lady Lufton. And I tell you, if such bad days ever came, I shouldn't go to you with my troubles, not after this.
Very well, my dear. You may go to the Duke of Omnium, if that suits you better.
Oh, you are unfair. You are unjust.
Am I indeed? You know this is too bad. It really is. You discover that I refuse to congratulate you on your husband's new companion, and then you scold me for it.
But Lady Lufton...
No, no. I have heard enough, I assure you. Quite enough. Goodbye.
I have arrived at Gatherum Castle. I hope I will find my stay here worthwhile. For in truth, the previous week and more have not afforded me uninterrupted pleasure. And yet I think despite that, it behoves me to break free of Lady Lufton's despotism. It behoves me to rise in the world. Does it not?
Aha, we are next, Mr. Robarts.
You think so?
Yes, the great man's eye is cast upon us.
Good evening to you.
Good evening, Good evening, Your Grace. I am Miss Dunstable. This gentleman here is Mr. Mark Robarts.
How do you
and
do, sir?
And you, I believe, are the Duke of Omnium.
I am, and delighted to meet you both. Miss Dunstable, I was advised that you would be bringing a parrot with you, and I have given the strictest advice to my servants in order to ensure his comfort and well-being.
Oh, well, that was so very good of you, but I'm afraid I haven't brought the parrot after all.
You haven't? Dear, oh dear, I do call that unkind. I had an aviary built on purpose. Oh. Is it too late to send for it?
I'm afraid it is. He's gone on a trip with my doctor. But I have brought my poodle.
Ah, yes, I knew I could rely upon the poodle.
Well, now, where is he, I wonder? Pompey! Oh, I declare, I must go and look for him. What if they put him among your Grace's dogs? His morals would be utterly destroyed.
That remark wasn't intended to be personal, I hope.
Well, Your Grace, I couldn't say, but knowing Miss Dunstable, I'm sure she meant no disrespect by it.
No more than I deserve, at least. Now, Mr. Robarts, I'm so happy to make your acquaintance. You're a friend of Lord Lufton, I believe.
That's right.
How are things at Framley?
May I come in?
Lady Lufton.
I wish to request your pardon, my dear.
Oh, Lady Lufton.
I should not have spoken of your husband as I did. And therefore I am here to ask you to forgive me.
Oh.
You will forgive me, won't you? I have not been at all happy since you left my den this morning. And I don't suppose that you have either. But Fanny, dearest... We know each other too well, do we not? And love each other too much to quarrel for very long.
Oh, yes, Lady Lufton. Yes, indeed.
So, let us have a talk, shall we, and resolve our differences.
Yes, yes, let us do that.
My dear, you were quite right to stand up for Mr. Robarts this morning. A woman has no greater duty to anyone than what she owes to her husband. So I love you for what you did. Loved you, in truth, this morning. Though you were a little fierce with me.
Yes.
And I dare say I was a little fierce myself. But enough of that. About this good man of yours.
Dear Lady Lufton, you must forgive him. Please, please.
Well, since you ask me to, I will. I forgive him.
Thank you.
And we'll have nothing more said about that horrid Duke of Omnium, either now or when your husband returns.
I am so much obliged to you, Lady Lufton.
You have no need to be. But I have to tell you, my dear, Mr. Robarts would be much better off without the Duke of Omnium and Gatherum Castle.
Oh, I know. Much better off.
I'm glad to hear you say so. If you'll take my advice, Fanny... You'll use your influence, as the good, dear, sweet wife you are, to prevent your husband going to Gatherum any more, or for that matter, to Chaldecott's. I'm an old woman, and he is young, and it's natural that he should think me behind the times. But he'll benefit more if he sticks to his old friends. Of that, my dear, there can be no doubt.
I hoped that by coming to Gatherum Castle I might make a stand against Lady Lufton's power.
demonstrate some independence of spirit. But I do not think I have made much progress yet. Else I would not have been so anxious to learn what Lady Lufton said about my being here, nor would I have been as relieved as I was when I read dear Fanny's letter, when I learned that there will be no reproaches from her ladyship. You poor fellow. Whatever you may do or say, you are as afraid of the old woman as ever.
Oh, there you are, Robarts. Admiring the view, are you? It's turned a bit cool for that, I'd have thought. Get a walk.
Very well.
I've had a letter from Lufton.
Oh, yes. I did write to him, as you asked me to. Mentioned that bit of land in Oxfordshire.
Well, thank you, Robarts, but as it transpires, he won't need to sell it.